this is Bailey Flannery, your host, coming to you from the Detroit River Story Lab podcast. And I am here today with Tefira Rushton from Black to the Land Coalition, although you might know her from several other community initiatives because she is just one heck of a woman doing a lot of work in the community. So Tefira, hello. How are you today?
No, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Bailey.
Thank you so much for being here. So just to get started, why don't we dive in right away with Detroit and your relationship to this incredible city. Did you grow up in Detroit or did you come to Detroit later in your life? What does that relationship look like?
Yeah, I grew up in Detroit. And I think my relationship with the river really amplified because I lived in the Lower East Side for about 12 years. And so that was like a normal everyday part of my walk to the river, take the kids to the river. Also, there's been a lot of spiritual movements in Detroit and done a lot of like spiritual work on the river, weddings on the river, funerals on the river. It's been a big part of, I think, most Detroiters' life. I feel like I could never live around somewhere that doesn't have water, right? Because I'm so used to having it so close and accessible.
That completely makes sense. And it's really interesting to hear you highlight the kind of spiritual component along the water. You highlighted that you had grown up in Detroit. You've been there, it sounds like, pretty close to your whole life, if not your whole life.
Yep.
So did you feel like that spiritual component came in a lot when you were younger, or is that something that developed more for you as an adult in this space?
As a young adult, I was kind of coming into my own and learning about different religions and learning about different ways to approach the land, really. And learning that water is a healer. A lot of my practices happen at the water. There's a number of different local religious organizations who do ceremony at the water. There's a lot of interaction around that, just sitting meditating or making offerings to the water. A lot of cleansing that happens in the water for me personally. I just feel like if I'm having a bad day, like I need to go get to the water.
It's just really interesting to hear you say that, because of the various people I've interviewed, some will kind of take this more scientifically ecological bent, and others will, from a more community organizing perspective, talk about their relationships with the water. But almost every single person still highlights that kind of spiritual, that cleansing, that sacredness of the water. So I find it interesting that that's just something across the board that no matter who you are, that's a relationship you're going to have with the water in a sense. And that it is so related to health and wellness. You can't have healthy people without healthy water. So on that note, that actually makes me wonder, though, you've, again, talked about these incredible ceremonies that take place on the water and whatnot. Do you have any favorite memories, again, either from growing up or from your adult life here, favorite memories related to the riverfront, the waterfront, anything like that with the Detroit River?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, so many memories. One thing that just stands out to me, I think, because I have this picture behind me, and I don't know if you see my kids back here, but that is on the Detroit River. That is them just being joyful and playing in the river, just putting their feet in. There's like down on the Lower East Side, you can catch some crawfish down there. It's really,
what?
You wouldn't think that. Yeah, no, you wouldn't think that, but we did that a couple times. I think my most vivid memories right now are of my children playing in the river, you know, and their excitement.
What do you think it means to you as a mother to be able to see your children kind of continuing in that relationship with the water?
It's great, because both my daughters are kind of into kayaking right now, and I'm like, yeah. As a parent, you try not to like put your beliefs on your kids, but you just try to expose them to different things. So it's really precious when they do get what you're saying.
You mentioned that your daughters love kayaking. So is that pretty common for you and your family, an activity like that? Or are there any other activities that you love to do on the water?
Oh, we are big swimmers. We are big swimmers. In fact, so I have my youngest, he has autism. The water and nature in general brings out a lot of his personality. His first words to me were tree and soil and flowers. Like, we go outside and for him being in the water is like, that is his jam. Okay. He's dunking in there. We'll often go out to the beach. I mean, Trey has this precious resource of Belle Isle, and the Belle Isle beach is a favorite for us. I do a lot of kayaking out there, and then I just also sit and enjoy it. I also research a lot around the river because I'm a urban farmer, and the history of Detroit is so wound up in people's use of the river. This area was settled due to land grants, and so those land grants gave people, each person got a space along the river. So I mean, everything just goes back to the river for me, you know. Like, it just it's such a focal point for Detroit.
And it's interesting that, like you said, everything does go back to the river, from your son with autism, who, I mean, it sounds like his first words were very much grounded in, no pun intended, but the environment, and you said tree and soil, and that the water in these surroundings gave him language, in a sense, and that they, I think, again, it continually give so much back to us. But on the note of everything in Detroit kind of coming back to the river, how do you feel that having this kind of relationship to the water as a woman, as a mother, as an individual Detroiter, how do you feel that that has fed into the work you do in organizations like Black to the Land and as an urban farmer? How do you think those are related?
I grew up and I had the opportunity in the summers to do a lot of camping and things like that. So I was able to get out in nature, and I would, from a young age, like, be able to feel this separation between how I felt out in nature and how I felt in this city. It was very distinct. I remember coming back from a camping experience or being out in nature and, like, having to flip and turn my guard back on and having to almost get hardened again in the city, right? Whereas I'm at camp, I don't care how my hair looks, I'm just wild. And then when you come into the city, growing up in the 90s, there were some rough things that was happening, you know what I mean? And you had to, like, have a certain posture about yourself that you didn't have to have in nature. That distinction is something I've always wanted to share, that experience with others. I've always wanted to, like, I want everybody to see kind of what is, like, your true self versus what the city might put on you. That hardness and that grit is not really who you are. And I just want people to see that. You know what I mean? I just want people to see that. So I was having these experiences and a lot of my peers were not. It just was something I always wanted to share with people.
It sounds like you had this incredible experience when you were younger where, as you were saying, you grew up in an environment where you had to kind of be hardened. You had to be on the lookout constantly, really taking care of yourself and, I'm sure, other people around you. But when you were, as you said, quotes for people who can't see me right now, in quotes, out in nature, that you got to let your guard down. You got to just be you and not be hypervigilant all the time. Or I shouldn't say hypervigilant, just vigilant. And let your hair down, like you said. How do you think people get that experience in the kind of urban farming environments that you foster?
So that, for me, is like one of the key points of urban farming. We may be in the city, but there's this place where you can go, where you can just take a breath, just feel the sun on you. It fosters an appreciation of land. You get to understand the seasonality. You get to understand the importance of, like, the water, and you touch it. You get to understand all of the microbes in the soil. And that is the land, and that is life, and, like, stronger relationship with it, to where you're not so much detached. So farming is really important for me because of that experience that people get.
And creating a space for them, like you were saying, just to let their guard down and be with the earth and foster that connection, that's so important. Do you think it's especially important considering that so often people nowadays, and I think it seems especially so in urban environments, are detached from food, especially if you're in a food desert? You are oftentimes deprived of healthy food and don't have secure access to food, even though there's an overabundance in the United States. And also that you don't get to have that connection to food, as far as, like you were saying, knowing the growing process and understanding the seasons and the cycles and getting to grow your own food. It seems like there's so much power and confidence that can come from that. But I want to know, what changes have you observed in community members or friends and family that you've seen get to participate in an urban farm like this? How does it change things for them?
I could tell you, like, my first experience starting an urban community garden, there was all type of people on the block. You got your kids, you know, you got your slew of kids that are just outside hanging, bikes, you know, all that. Then you got your elders. They're, like, apprehensive. What are you doing? Then you got your teenagers. Some of them are just trying to be cool. You got your drug dealers. You know what I mean? You got all these different personalities in the neighborhood. One thing that really stands out for me right now is I'm thinking back on that experience of starting that garden. Before I even started the garden, I went and I talked to people. I talked to these different communities that I'm talking about, right? I talked to the youth. What do you want to see? What do you want to see there? So basically you have this empty, vacant lot, you know what I mean? And the opportunity to like transform it into something that you want to see. What you said, that's power. That's like, I had this thought and I wanted to become this, and here's how we're going to do it. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's empowerment. That's like, I have the ability to make this happen, to determine what's going to happen around me. And they loved it. Like, oh, you want the bench right here? Okay. And next summer there was a bench right there. And you like tomatoes? Okay, we're going to grow a whole bed of tomatoes right here. I think that's like one of the things that stands out for me.
Yeah, people having control over their environment and their surroundings again. And also, I'm sure getting to build that and interact with other community members and establishing more trust, or was that trust already there before and it was just kind of building on that? Did you notice it changing connections amongst people too?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. Exactly. One thing in our urban environments and kind of the trauma that we've been through, right, is like, we can be a little standoffish, even of our neighbors. You know what I mean? It's like, you see that person every day. How much do you interact with that person? And then especially like in neighborhoods that may be experiencing some decline or things like that, like there's a lot of distrust that's ensued in people. And so just to be able to like come out and like talk to each other and like see each other just like as people and have a space for that, that's beautiful. I can't even put it into words because it's like, you know what I mean? It's so much there. It's so much healing. And there's been so much literature on it. But like on a real level, I just think nature is one of those healers. And that's why everybody feels like the river is cleansing, because it literally is, you know?
Yeah. And that leads to another question I have for you, which is, it's clear that there's something transformative that happens, you know, in these urban gardens where people get to be connected to food. They get to let their guard down in that space, but they also get to let their guard down with one another. How do you see that connecting to people's relationships with the riverfront? Do you see a kind of parallel transformation happening there? Or what is the connection there exactly, would you say?
Okay, so we started talking a little bit about the history of farming in the city. And we can fast forward a little bit through, but to really look at like the kind of the settlers in this area who had those river farms. And when you really connect, understanding like how much you need water for your gardens, how much you need water for your plant, and then you really look back at history and like see how, for me, there's this like epiphany around colonialism. Because one of the other projects that I'm involved with is the Black Farmer Land Fund. It's supporting particularly Black farmers in the capital that they need to get farms, to get land. And when we look at the history, this land was literally parceled out and given to people. And that those people then accumulated wealth. It's an epiphany. So we were just having a conversation yesterday about how, like, if governments could do it then, could we not do the same thing now? Like, could we not do some kind of form of granting people land that have been here, that have been putting sweat equity into the land, like farmers, like gardeners? It blows my mind when I look at the history. So I'm not sure if that answers your question, but...
Yeah, no, I think that really answers the question in a way that I didn't necessarily expect. But no, I mean, you highlight something that I think is very essential but easy to overlook, which is that you can't really farm without water. Like, regardless of what, even if you're in a desert environment, at some point those plants will need some moisture. So no, that those two things, that the river is really inextricable from this farmland, and as you were saying, how it was kind of doled out. And I think it also relates to, importantly, that there's this very stereotypical image of what it means to be in the country or to be connected to the land. And usually it's the image of, you know, this old white farmer who's a man. And so I'm wondering, like, what are you seeing as far as movement towards changing that image and supporting Black farmers? Or are you seeing more young Black women farmers? Is that something that's kind of on the horizon or are already happening?
Definitely already happening. I think so. When I first came on the urban ag scene, I was the first Black employee full time in my department. We had some seasonal Black employees and some Black employees come and leave, but I was one of like 8 employees who were like from this city and represented the people in this city, right? And like that was an experience, because a lot of the farmers that were like getting publicity for the work that they were doing or getting interviews or things like that were like young white farmers who were coming to the city. And that's great, and that's a part of our narrative, but it's just like one part of it. But they were getting such a shine and such support and such, you know, and it's like, it made me actually dig into the history of farming into the city and understanding, like, as people migrated to the north, they brought those skills with them, you know what I mean? And like really looking at the history, understanding the Farm-A-Lot program that was under Coleman's administration, and he actually played a part in that because he had a farming history, you know what I mean? So it's just like, I just got all into the history because I was like, this current narrative is not jiving with what I really feel. You know what I mean? And so I would say that Black and brown people have been at the forefront of this movement, maybe since that great migration happened.
And like you said, I think it's easy to have that kind of stereotypical narrative, especially when, and not to knock those people doing that work, but, you know, when you have young white men who are farmers and talking about our urban farming and they're getting a disproportionate amount of the spotlight and the resources,
yeah,
then it's overshadowing this entire history and narrative where, as you were saying, well, when Black and brown folks were moving in this great migration, they were bringing those farming skills with them. They have been farmers and have been here all this time. It's just a matter of honoring that legacy and recognizing it, and also then changing how we're doling out these resources to support young Black farmers is what it sounds like, at least. So that 100% makes sense. As far as, since we're kind of touching on the present and the future as well, what do you see as the future for farming and for its relationship to the water, especially for young Black farmers in the Detroit area or around the Detroit area? What do you see that future and that relationship with the water looking like?
Oh, that's hard to answer.
Which is a big question.
So I think a lot of people are thinking about climate change as we start to see more and more effects of climate change on a day-to-day. Particularly farmers are seeing it, right? Like, if you're growing food, you're very connected to the land, and you're seeing the changes that are happening on the land. And like, we're all seeing an increase of flooding events right here in our city. Some of that is due to our antiquated drainage water system, right? And some of that is due to the increase in rainfall in our area. And so farmers who are close to the land, or people who are close to the land, can make an impact on that with what they're planting. So in my dream world, Bailey, we come to this realization that we have to be in right relationship with the land, which when I'm saying land, we're obviously talking water too, right? So we have to be in right relationship with these natural systems, and urban farming is kind of a way of doing that. It's like reclaiming vacant spaces that could be developed on, but how about we just save a few spots for green space? You know what I mean? Like, we have this opportunity here in the city. We know the benefits of green space. We know that they provide pollinators. We know that they help to loosen up the soil. We know that it helps to with water infiltration, rainwater, storm management. Like, we know all of these things, but part of our society is kind of afraid to go there. I mean, we're like constantly going toward development, but we're not thinking about natural system development, green infrastructure, of which farming is a part of that, you know? And so I see farmers, when it comes to water, really playing a role in supporting stormwater management systems in the city. We've done some research around the amount of water that farms can hold. So it's all a system, and being a positive player in that system is what I see farmers as. And bringing us back to the land, if you're walking past a farm, you're like, my food is coming from this land, like, I need to treat it better. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you participate in growing your food, you have more of an appreciation for all of the steps and levels that it takes to get your food to your plate.
And to your point, actually, in an interview that I conducted yesterday with Irma Liephart. I don't know if you've ever met her from the Michigan chapter of the Sierra Club, but she was talking about what an instrumental, absolutely pivotal role local farmers play in one of the major climate change related issues in the area, which is pollution runoff into the river and into Lake Erie, which is causing these enormous, in part at least, algal blooms, which are then killing all these different other forms of life, and it's creating essentially this whole mess. I mean, people are running into shortages of drinking water because it's essentially being poisoned with this. Just to your point again, I think part of why we want to bury our heads in the sand is like, what can I do to stop something that's such a colossal problem? How do we interact with it? But as you're highlighting, there are things that people can do now in the city along the water that would make a huge difference, even if it's just a small group of individuals doing this together. That leads me to, I think I have two final questions for you, Tepfira. The first final question is, the second to last, sometimes it's easy to have an unhealthy relationship with the water, the surrounding land, all these systems, because we view them as these passive entities that are waiting for us to use them or us to take what we want from them versus having a relationship with them and being seeing ourselves as a part of that system. So just to anthropomorphize the river and the surrounding land for a moment, if you can imagine the water and the land speaking, what do you think they might say to us? What kind of story do you think they might tell?
That's a great question. And when you said it, my first reaction was, stop hurting me. You know, that was my first thing I heard. We are really seeing today the effects of rampant colonialism across the world. And when I say colonialism, I'm also talking about this greedy mentality that's not taking into account a true appreciation for water and land, which are, for me, hopefully this doesn't sound kooky, Bailey, but they're living entities. Like, they have living microbes in it. Whether you want to look at it like they have microbes in them that are living, it's a living entity. This space, these plants, this land, this water needs to be respected in a way that colonialism and capitalism doesn't often allot for. If it's saying anything, it's like, respect me. I feed you. Like, I feed you, little people. And one of the beauties of being on the water or like looking at a large tree is like, I was out on a river a couple weeks ago kayaking with my two daughters, and we're on this big river in these small kayaks. It's like kind of scary, you know what I mean? It's kind of like you feel your insignificance. You feel like you are just a tiny peon. And that nature could kill you if it wanted to. And I think we try to pretend like we're in this position over nature, over the water, that we can control it. And in some ways we have that ability, but if we don't do it in harmony with like this force that is water, with this force that is land, if we don't come to the realization that we are peons in this game and act accordingly, we can be in a lot of trouble here.
I think you're highlighting something very true. It's just that we need to wake up and listen to, I don't think it's kooky. Maybe I'm kooky too, but I view the river and the water and these systems that are all interconnected with us, I think they are beings. And I think we're all enmeshed. We can't take care of ourselves without taking care of the water and the land.
Absolutely. And we're so detached from that.
Right.
That's the thing.
Right.
You know, we're so detached from that reliance on the land. It's crazy.
It is. But that's why I'm so grateful that there are initiatives like, again, Black to the Land and those others that you've highlighted that are pushing against that dominant narrative and that dominant form of relating to these entities. And you're saying, no, there's another way, and there's a healthier way, and we can do that.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about Black to the Land? I just want to...
Oh my gosh, yes, please, let's. Yeah.
I mean, I think just to emphasize the exciting part of creating these spaces for people to enjoy the water in a different way, enjoy the land in a different way. I just wanted to highlight it for a second because I know that's what we were talking about. We talked a lot about farming, but but the Black to the Land piece is kind of separate, and this kind of special thing that's encouraging these relationships to happen.
So if we could just, like, maybe for listeners who aren't familiar with Black to the Land specifically, because like you said, we focused a lot on farming, which is wonderful, but specifically focusing on what this unique organization does, how would you describe it to people who aren't familiar with it?
We focus on creating space and opportunity for people of color specifically. So we get some controversy around the need for people of color to congregate together in outdoor spaces. You know, I think that pushback comes from this notion that separation sometimes is bad. But in this context, we really find that Black and brown people are able to like step into their leadership more when they're in these exclusive spaces. So sometimes I think in a setting that's somewhat unfamiliar to you, you have folks, maybe like white folks who come in and like are more familiar, they've been kayaking, they've had those experiences, they've camped, then you kind of like take a step back and you kind of maybe feel like this isn't for me, or you'll let them set up the tent. But when we're in these exclusive places, no, there's nothing but room for you to step into leadership there and to have some dialogue around what it means to be Black in these spaces. It's also super important because some of the places that we go to, particularly in, yeah, I don't want to get into too, you know, politics of it, but particularly like around that Trump era, when we were traveling, it was very contentious in some areas, and it still is, knowing where to travel, how to travel, and doing it as a group just for safety in some cases, you know what I mean? And so it's just a really special thing to me because I feel like coming back to the land, coming back to the water is a healing factor for folks who have been historically oppressed. There are so many different challenges that we have to kind of work through, and nature helps us do that.
I think just what you highlighted beautifully is, I mean, simply when we heal our connections with the water and with the land again, we're also building and healing connections with the people around us, and that I think you almost can't help but build community when you do these things. So, yeah, thank you for highlighting that for the listeners. I think that's a really great takeaway.
Yeah.
So with that, is there anything else that you wish I had asked you or you would like to talk about that we haven't yet?
I think it's really important whenever I'm speaking or saying anything is to like recognize the long history of the river and the land and the indigenous history and like just really paying respect to that.
And acknowledging that we are all living on indigenous lands and that these are the not just the ancestral lands of these people, but they are their lands currently. I think that's a great note to end on. So, Tepfira Rushton, thank you so much for just sharing your incredible experiences, your leadership, and making time to be here with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bailey. I appreciate you too.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Detroit River Story Lab podcast. Interested in getting involved, maybe sharing your own story or helping someone else to share theirs? Send an email to drsl-admin@umich.edu or simply click the link in our bio for more information. Thanks, listeners.